in, everyone, to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have a phenomenal guest joining us today, and he's here to talk to us about a great, great theater company that exists here in New York. Joining us today, we have the artistic director, Tim Erickson, who is from Boomerang Theater Company. He's here to talk to us about their 9-play super season, and you can get your tickets and more information or any of these shows by visiting boomerangtheater.org. We have had the privilege of attending a couple of Boomerang shows since our relocation to here to New York, and they have been absolutely stunning, absolutely wonderful. And so we're excited to not only bring you this great company, but also to dive into this amazing season they've got going on. So without further ado, let us go ahead and welcome on our guest, Tim. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Andrew, thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
I'm so excited you're here. I can't wait to just dive more into this amazing season. You know, the press release I got, I was like, you know, it's so exciting. These 9 shows you've got. So why don't I start first and foremost by asking you, can you tell us a little bit about this season?
Yes. So we just celebrated our 25th anniversary in 2023, and we marked it, obviously we were still coming out of the pandemic, and it felt like we were still struggling to figure out how we were going to support the artists that we were working with. We were still trying to figure out how we were going to bring our audiences back, how we were going to continue to support the communities that we were supporting, how we were going to continue to be storytellers, but also to be community advocates and bring artists and audiences together, how we were going to continue to fundraise, all these things that sort of felt like they were disparate threads that were sort of floating further and further apart in some ways. And so collectively, the idea came that, no, and I should step back and say that also pre-pandemic and even during pandemic, we had been doing new play development that had sort of come to a screeching halt when pandemic halted all of our production plans. So we had plays that were in the pipeline that suddenly could no longer move forward at the pace that they had been moving forward at. So plays that were ready to go, but then had stopped dead in their tracks. So we had a backlog of things that were ready to go. And so with these two ideas, we thought, well, what's the best way for us to be able to provide a structure to our artists that allows them to know that we will be here providing for them? What is a way for us to provide some sort of assurances and sort of healthy infrastructure to our audiences to allow them to sort of look at us and say they're going to be here for us as other theater companies were pulling back or shutting down or, you know, pulling away in some ways due to funding and budget cuts and things. And also to sort of try and lead by example to other theater companies and say, look, if we put our foot forward and say, put our feet forward and say, if you get out in front of some of these things and say, we'll be here, we're gonna be part of our community for the long haul, then maybe we can be more proactive about some of this programming. And so we said, we're going to announce a 9-play super season, not just 1 play at a time or 1 year at a time. We're going to announce 3 years of programming. And it will allow us to clear out all of these plays that we had been had backlogged on. And we're going to announce all of them. We're going to produce all of them. And they're going to be in this cadence. And here's where we're going to be. And it also is going to allow us to let our artists plan out their next 3 years and where they're going to be. It's going to allow us to announce to funders where our structure is going to be and where they can fund us and find us. And it's going to allow us to set up our fundraising and development arms and say, here's where we want our benefits and our galas to fall, where we want where our budgets are going to look like and where our end of year giving is going to be, what our totals are going to look like, where our grants need to fill. And it also allowed us to really think about who we wanted to be as a theater company and allow us to sort of shape and sort of talk about what kind of leadership and capacity we wanted to do. Because in a way, the thing that we announced, 9 plays in 3 years, 3.5 years, is absolutely insane in this economic and audience scarcity sort of world. but it meant that we have to grow into this theater company that we had just announced we're going to be. So we have to hire the right amount of people. We have to find the right amount of money. We have to put the high, you know, figure out the right platforms to, you know, get the right amount of people on our mailing list. We have to train the right amount of people. We have to mentor and get the right interns in. We have to be the thing we just announced we're going to be. And so it's inspiring and it's scary and it's going to challenge us and it's going to be the best thing we've ever done. And it's going to be something that I think at the end of 3 years, we're going to look back and say it changed the way that everybody involved in it looks at their careers and the things that they gotten to do.
Wow. I am just blown away by that. That is incredible. Absolutely incredible. Way to go.
Wait, yeah. I mean, let's talk about that in a year when you're like, man, that was the craziest thing. Like, how's it going so far? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like,
well, let me ask, but these nine shows that you've picked over the next 3 years, how did you come upon and select these particular pieces?
Yeah, well, so three of them are Shakespeare plays. So that's one of the things that is built into the structure of our theater company is that we started doing outdoor Shakespeare for free in public parks. And so we had gotten a little bit away from that during the pandemic because we couldn't be out. We could be outside, but we couldn't gather. And then that was one of the things. And then when we could gather, everybody who wanted to have an outdoor wedding took all of the public parks away from us, so we couldn't do that. And then they wanted to have music festivals, and so there was no public space available. And so we were sort of trapped by that. So we've recommitted to doing a three-year Shakespeare cycle. And specifically, we've chosen Shakespeare plays that we have never, ever touched before. So we're starting in 2024 with Romeo and Juliet. We'll come back in 2024 with Romeo and Juliet, 2025 with Richard II, and 2026 with The Taming of the Shrew. And so that will be a fun little arc of three plays that we've never done. The other nine are all premieres. The majority of them are written by women or LGBTQ writers, which is exciting for us to work on. And I think that they really tapped into people writing about a moment of both anxiety, but also a moment of change, of people looking at how a moment of tension leads to a moment of fracture that leads to a moment of maybe evolution or of growth or a moment of a new beginning. And so they all felt like they were of this sort of tied to this pandemic moment in a way. And I don't think they knew that maybe at the time when they were writing them, because a lot of them started their creative journeys in 2019, 2018. But when they've come to their full life, maybe in 20 or in 2021, they suddenly were so of the moment that we were living in. And so when we went to schedule them, they sort of fell just completely open in this moment of the pandemic. And so they felt natural to be able to talk about what we were all going through. And so we wanted to make sure that they got to see the full light of day, and now they're going to. And so we're really excited to be able to get them on the boards. And it's also going to be really fun to be able to schedule all of those exciting plays together, right? Like, they're going to be over 3 years. So not only are they going to be produced in New York City, but they're also in some ways going to be in conversation with each other. They're a part of they're a string of pearls in a way that are all going to be connected by not just the sequence that they're in, but the sorority and fraternity that they are of a part of in this nine play super season. And so we're really excited about that as well.
That is marvelous. Well, I kind of want to snowball off of that a little bit, because there have been a couple of shows that have already been done part of the season. What has it been like developing those pieces, and if they've started, you know, the upcoming works as well that you've got to share?
Yeah, so we kicked off the first play in the nine play super season was The Great Divide, which was Amy Crossman's one person show that kicked off at Here in October of 2023, and that was really the start of this whole process, and a great way for us to really dive into what this process would look like. It was directed by Scott Ebersold. It had a fantastic run in the downstairs space at Here in October of 2023, and couldn't have asked for really a better way to kick off the journey of this nine-play super season. It had great reviews. It was a small run. It's going to have a continued life, I think, in festivals probably across the country and possibly around the world. Edinburgh is on the horizon for us at some point, probably other fringe festivals around the country. It just had a run upstate at a one-person festival upstate. So I think it's going to have a continued life. And so we're super proud of that show and all the things that it did, as well as getting us kicked off in the right way for this season. And so we're now in the process of getting ready to have auditions and final callbacks for Romeo and Juliet. We're in starting pre-production for Gina Femia's new play, Mercutio Loves Romeo, Loves Juliet Loves, which will be in November of 2024. And we're in the freest of pre-productions for Leah Romeo's wonderful, wonderful three-hander, which will go up in March of 2025, which is called The Lucky Ones. And that's going to go up in Manhattan. We're still hunting for a venue right now, but I couldn't be more excited about these plays because they're just so amazing. And the fact that we get to put them together and get them in front of people finally and get audiences in front of them is it's just the best. I mean, I can't really even describe it. And one of the best things about it, I mean, Andrew, I mean, you see a lot of plays, so you know sort of how exciting it is to get good plays in front of excited audiences, right? And so one of the best things about scheduling plays as an artistic director, there's two great things about it. And I won't go on too much longer about my giddiness about it, but I will share these two artistic director joys of my life. One of them, after you schedule the plays, one of the things is you get to raise money for plays. And I don't think people talk about this joy enough, is you get to go out to people and say, I am doing this amazing play and it's by Gina Femia and it's about these things and it talks about love and it talks about loss and it talks about transformation and it talks about discovery and it talks about all of these things and we get to do it. And you, my friend, with a checkbook or a dollar bill in your pocket or a business that wants to sponsor it, get to be a part of it. And for the love of God, you get the chance to be in on this with me. And I get the chance to talk to you about it. It doesn't get any better than that for me to get to have that conversation with somebody and to give them the opportunity to join us in that process. And then the second great thing I get to do about this is I get, after that process happens and they get to give me a little bit of money or a little bit of time or a sponsorship or whatever, is then I get to take that element and I get to turn around to a mailing list full of people or an audience. And I get to say, we have this play and it's got these people in it and it's going to run for this amount of time, but it's only going to run for this amount of time. And it's these 3 weeks or this 4 weeks. These 12 days, and it is this special thing that we've made, and it's going to be here, but it isn't here forever. You can go to Sondheim Show X, which is amazing, but it will be here for 12 weeks, 16 weeks, 20 weeks. Gina Femia's masterpiece is going to be here for 3 weeks. And if you miss it, you've missed it. We have this jewel today. Don't come play with us today. Come be part of this today. There's a handful of seats. There's 70 seats in this house. Less than 1,000 people in 8 million people in Manhattan will get to see this beautiful thing. You want to be one of those 1,000 people, people like us, people who know and enjoy and get to roll around in the things that are special about theater, get to go to these things. Come play with us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it's about for me. And that's why we schedule 9 plays at a time and go out and raise money like crazy people.
Oh my gosh. Yes. You are hired. You are hired as our fundraising head. I want to just like open up my wallet and think, take it all. Here's a blank check. Put the number up. That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing. So kind of building on that, is there a message or a thought you're hoping that your audiences take away from this season?
I want them to go to the theater, man. I want them to get excited about going to see new plays. I want them to be excited about seeing plays by writers they've never heard of. I want them to get excited about going to see plays by female writers, non-binary writers, LGBTQ writers, anybody. Take a shot on a play that sounds interesting that you've never heard of, take a chance. I'm going to see a play tonight at the Art New York Theaters that I've never heard of, by a writer that I've never heard of, but it got a great review from a friend. And I was like, I'm going. I don't know anybody in this show, but I'm super psyched and I can't wait. And I'm super excited that other people will get the chance to sort of be jazzed about going to see a show again and be excited about, you know, getting out in the world again. You know, I'm as guilty of this as anybody. You know, I come home from my day job and I like sitting on my couch sometimes, and I like making dinner in my house and like putting on my comfy pants and like, you know, firing up the Netflix. But like, there's something to be said for being in a room with a lot of people and like hearing it for the first time and shedding a tear and feeling that joy and like standing on your feet and clapping a lot. You know, like, you can't beat it. We got to remember that.
Second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better, pull the curtain back, if you will. And I would love to know what or who inspires you. What shows, playwrights, or composers have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
That is a great question. It's funny. When I was a kid, I was raised as a kid in, you know, high school. I think we all did musicals and things like that. But I didn't really always gravitate towards those things. I was more interested in plays and things where people got to talk to each other and sort of like look each other in the eye, sort of in like moment to moment sort of things, more than like breaking into song or breaking into tap dance or things. And so I gravitated towards scene work and things like that. And so even in college, I when I discovered that there were people writing plays, you know, in classes rather than just being given plays in books, I thought that was amazing. Like, I didn't really realize you did that kind of thing. Yeah, that was sort of the light bulb moment for me. And like, people wrote things and you could be a part of sort of the genesis of creating something. And then sort of, you know, being able to produce new work has been fun. And I really like the idea of being able to pair new work and classic work together. Boomerang over the years has really been able to pair new plays and classic plays together. And I think you see a little bit of that in this 9-play super season, where we're talking about Shakespeare and new plays sort of in concert with each other. Earlier seasons of ours over the 25 years, we've seen new plays, classic plays like Shakespeare, and what we've often called neglected plays, like a lost, you know, a not recently produced Craig Lucas play, or a not recently produced, you know, Eugene O'Neill play, or a early Sam Shepard play or something like that, sort of dovetailed in with a more recent, you know, revival of something. So pairing things in concert together that sort of resonate or sort of form a trio that sort of bounces off of each other and sort of makes an interesting trio has always been sort of fascinating idea to me. And I think it comes from, I spent a half a year in England in college, and I got to spend a lot of time at the National Theatre in London, where seeing a lot of plays in rep and in rotating rep at the National was sort of a very interesting thing to me. That was a sort of a foreign concept, because we don't really have that per se here in the United States. We have a little bit out in like Oregon Shakespeare or things like that, but in New York, we certainly didn't have that. And so being able to think of a place that had three stages but had 12 productions running at the same time was just amazing. And so that really just blew my mind. And so having things be in rotating rep and being able to be in communication with each other through being in production together was always sort of fascinating. So I rambled on through that question, Andrew. I really just bulldozed through an answer that was a non-answer. So feel free to just, you know, take whatever you want for your audiences out of that and, like, you know, put the rest on the cutting floor.
I think that is a wonderful answer. No, no, no.
You're a very
I
kind man, that. Andrew. That was not...
I loved it. I love the experiences and the inspirations that you've had. That really is fantastic. Great answer. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. And I want to snowball that into my next question, which is, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
It's funny. My wife will also always tell me that my favorite part of the play is the day that it starts and the day that it ends. And the middle is absolute torture. And I don't think that that is true. But there are a lot of the grind and the masochism of it is part of it in a way, right? Because it's all hard. And I do think I like part of that, right? Like you work on it and you work really, really hard at it. And it is always a thing that will always elude you in a way, right? It's always you always see the thing that you want it to be better at. You always, when you work on it, you always see the little flaw. You always see the tiny flub or the missed cue or the, and you always know the thing. And so it's always going to be the perfection is impossible. Perfection is unattainable. And I think that's always the thing that continues to drive me is like, let's do it again. Let's run it back. If we had one more performance, we might get it right. You know, if we'd bring more people in, we want to do it again. Like there's that drive in me that wants to do the next one. And we want to tell the next story and we want to bring more people to it. And we want to bring bigger houses and we want to get more people involved. And we want to, now that I do more producing, we want to get more artists involved. We want to get more, we want to raise the wage for this person and that person. And we want to make sure that we have a bigger marketing budget. And we want to make sure that we have a bigger social media campaign for this to make sure that we have that and that. We want to make sure that we reach out into more colleges. We want to make sure that we have more interns. We want to make sure that we're being good community members and we want to make sure that we're being good stewards and we want to make sure we're good mentors to the next generation. So there's a lot of things that, you know, the grind of making theater is exciting to me and that really compels me. But also now as I've gotten older, but and more of in the administrative and sort of producery side, I want to make sure that we're also making sure that the next generation of people that come and are leaders in theater, make sure that they know how we did it, improve on what we did, but also learn from the things that we figured out so that they can build on it.
That is a fabulous thought. And I love all that. Wonderful. And now we've arrived at my favorite question to ask guests, which is,
all right.
What is your favorite theater memory?
I have two, and I'll share the first one with you. My dad used to be a theater. No, he was a math teacher, and at a high school, a Catholic high school in New Jersey, and they needed a baby, a little kid, to be in the Christmas pageant in like the night, like 1974 or something like that. And so I had very, very blonde hair. And I think I remember being wheeled out like in the middle of like Mary and Joseph carried me out. Like dad just said, like, just don't cry. Just don't cry. It'll be fine. Just don't cry. And I was like, cool. I'm just going to go out there and don't cry. And then like a bunch of people clapped and I was like, this is awesome. So that was one, like the earliest memory is like, just get out there, your little blonde kid, like people clap. Great. I'm in. This is amazing. And then when I mentioned that I went to England to study when I was in college, I, again, had been raised on musicals for most of my life, and then I got into new plays and things like that in college, and it was a very sort of experimental, hippy-dippy college. I'd gone to England, and I hadn't really had that much exposure to the classics at that point, but I got a chance to go to the National Theater, and there was a production that had gotten rave reviews and was sold out. You couldn't see it. It was like there were no tickets available to it. And I didn't really know anything about it. I knew that it was, you know, like no one could get tickets. And like, oh my God, people were lined up outside all the time. And there was no tickets, whatever. And I was a theater student. I had no money. And I was like, oh, geez, I don't know if I'm ever going to get tickets. I don't even know what it is, whatever. And I walked by at one point and they had a sign outside the National that said, extra performance added, 11 p.m. show Monday night. And it was apparently for theater performers in the West End because Monday had been their night off. So it was their dark night. They added two extra shows, an 8 p.m. and an 11 p.m. show for people who worked on the West End to come and see it. And it happened to be a production of Uncle Vanya. And it happened to be Ian McKellen, Janet McTeer, and Anthony Scher in the 99-seat Cottesloe Theater at the National. And so I didn't know what that show was. I knew who Ian McKellen was, sort of, but I didn't know who either of the other two people were. And so I got a 10-pound standing room only ticket on the side. And I thought, well, if everybody gets this ticket, I mean, it must be a thing. And so I got my ticket. I stood on the rail on the side for 2.5 hours, and I could not believe it. I could not believe what was happening. I could not take my eyes off these people. I could not believe that this was a play that I had never heard of before, that people could do these things, that things could be paced fast and slow up and down, that things could be this, that a play written 100 and whatever years ago could be this sexual and sexy and engaging intellectually and emotional and modern. And I didn't understand that things could be like that. And I think that my theatrical life in a lot of ways has been an effort to chase that moment in every play since then, to recreate that thing, to make audiences feel like, I can't believe Shakespeare could be that sexy and that smart and that modern and that intellectual. I can't believe that this new play that Gina Femia wrote could be that smart and that sexy and that funny. How can it be all those things at one time? How can I feel all of these things at one time? It's like when you eat a pasta dish or something and you're like, how can there be garlic and pepper and umami and mushrooms? That can't be all at the same time. And yet they're all there. Because that's what makes it not a movie, right? That's what makes it not, you know, going to the circus or maybe not going to, you know, whatever. There's all these things at the same time, and you can't get that exactly that way anywhere else. And that's why I go tell people there's 1,000 seats, man, and we're only doing it for 3 weeks, and you got to come with me right now. And I brought it back around.
Wow. What fabulous memories. I mean, you know, you're where you got the theater bug, if you will, all the way to getting to see Ian McKellen in that intimate space.
It was crazy.
That is a testament to the importance, the luxury, and the power of indie theater. Those intimate spaces, they're not just for soon to be up and coming artists. Everyone treads those boards. And what an experience. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, it was incredible.
My final question for our interview is, if our listeners would like more information about Boomerang Theater or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Well, boomerangtheater.org is our website, and it's theater with an R-E. Boomerang Theater with an RE.org. And we are about to release, I will share this with you as an exclusive on your podcast. Yes, tickets are about to go on sale for Romeo and Juliet. Now, again, tickets are free, but our registration to sign up for tickets and get all the information is about to go on sale May 1st. But our super exclusive that we're about to release is our Romeo and Juliet Spotify playlist, which is songs inspired by and aspired to for Romeo and Juliet this summer, which is going to be a lot of fun. And we really can't wait to share that with you. It's the creative team has all contributed a song or two that really inspires them for Romeo and Juliet. And it's a really great playlist. So we're super excited to share some of the creative process with the audience as a little sneak peek about what's to come. So yeah, so check that out soon. And yeah, we're really excited, man. Romeo and Juliet's going to be a blast.
I am so excited to hear that. Thank you for sharing that exclusive with us. Oh, we appreciate that. But I'm just so excited about the upcoming productions you have, especially with this Romeo and Juliet in the Park. Come on, who doesn't love Shakespeare in the Park? Let's be and there is no main Shakespeare in the Park this year. So this is a great opportunity to still have that happen, just not on the Delacorte stage.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Great chance to come and check us out.
Yes. Well, Tim, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, for sharing your wonderful company and this wonderful, epic 9-play super season. This has been an absolute joy, and I really appreciate your time today. So thank you.
Andrew, this has been great. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
My guest today has been the artistic director, Tim Erickson, who is with Boomerang Theater Company. He joined us today to talk about their 9-play super season. You can get tickets and more information for this season by visiting boomerangtheater.org. And their upcoming production of Romeo and Juliet is being released. The tickets are going live May 1st. So make sure you go and RSVP for those free tickets. Take in this great show. And while you're at it, check out that Spotify playlist that Tim mentioned. It is fantastic. You're not going to want to miss the show or any of the other shows they have coming up. You can get a full list of these shows by heading to boomerangtheater.org. But make sure you come out, support great indie theater. This is a wonderful company to get behind. Once again, it's Boomerang Theater Company at boomerangtheater.org. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.